My guest at this time is Iowa Republican Congressman Steve King, who represents the Hawkeye State's 5th Congressional District. He joins me now to offer his reaction to the failure of the Supercommittee to be able to find $1.2 trillion in deficit reduction over the next 10 years, the deficit reduction plan that he was pushing in recent weeks, as well as why he believes this is the perfect example of why we need a stringent balanced budget amendment. And Congressman, it's always good to have you with us.
Well, it's good to be back with you, Greg. I appreciate it. This has been an interesting week so far. It promises to continue to be interesting.
A lot of people wondered, even when this idea of a super committee was created, whether there could be any common ground. They wondered it even more once we found out who the 12 members of the committee were. Does this strike you as a surprise, regardless of how disappointing it might be?
It's really not a surprise at all. I predicted this all the way through, except I believed that they would produce at least a proposal, but I never believed it could pass the House or the Senate. And I thought that somehow the public pressure would bring them to the point where they put something out that didn't solve the problem, that neither side liked, that maybe somehow they'd get the bullet and send it out, but I didn't think it'd ever pass. So we are at something that really takes us, I think it's actually, if it's not going to succeed, then I'm glad we don't have the next 30 days wrapped up in a big national debate about whether or not to go with this unamendable supercommittee proposal that now didn't come to us. But I'd just offer people some encouragement, and that is that, you know, I didn't ever believe it was going to work. It's, but in any case, this is $1.2 trillion in proposed cuts. Now it's at least, if nothing changes, they will be coming out of the automatic cuts in the sequestration process. That's the other side of an election, and they don't start until the second day of January 2013. And 18 days later, we inaugurate either the President Obama for a second term or a new president. I believe that will be a new president. It'll be new faces in Congress, in the House, and in the Senate, not completely, but there will be a change. We've had a watershed election that took place last November. 87 new freshman Republicans came in. This is a conservative Congress, more conservative than we've seen in a long time. And I'm hopeful that our presidential candidate will articulate a way to solve this problem. The debt commission, or excuse me, the super committee was not going to do it. $1.2 trillion in cuts really meant that the projected national debt 10 years down the road, and that's what they call baseline spending, which is a misnomer, would have been $28 trillion. With this sequestration, there are $26 trillion in national debt, and our budget doesn't balance any place in the future. So if you can't get to a balanced budget, I don't think you're solving the problem. That's why I think we need to do things far more quickly, and we're going to have to cut deeper and really tighten our belt here, or we will become one huge grease.
So basically, in addition to the disappointment of no good deal, they couldn't even get a good deal on what ultimately was a pretty small drop in the bucket.
A pretty small drop in the bucket, short-term, not very much for short-term cuts in the out years. And it's a political deadlock because we have a Republican majority in the House that I think needs to be stronger than we've been. And, of course, the Democrat majority in the Senate, Harry Reid running the Senate, uses that to shield and protect President Obama. President Obama didn't step up on this in a significant way except to criticize Republicans. He's the one that's caused this problem. We're looking at these trillions of dollars in spending that he has pushed, his economic stimulus plan among them, and this redistribution of wealth, and a lot of it's turning into political favors. And now I see that the Solyndra people that get laid off there get a check from the federal government on that it is part of a trade deal because supposedly they've lost their jobs because the Chinese are competing. This goes on and on. And we've got to agree one way or the other. Either we're going to use this Keynesian economic model of President Obama's continually, and he's essentially out of cards to play or out of bullets, as some say, or we're going to have to come back and go through a period of austerity and anchor this economy back in free enterprise, let people be rewarded for their capital investment, for their risk-taking, and for their work, and then we go to the Adam Smith type of philosophy, Milton Friedman type, where we have to produce our way out of this. We cannot spend our way out of it.
Let's go in our remaining moments here quickly over the plan you are advocating as part of a Tea Party type of approach. I believe the cuts over the next decade were much, much higher than what the Supercommittee was negotiating, somewhere in the neighborhood of, I believe, about $9 trillion. Explain what the plan was that you were part of.
The plan was, the Tea Party, a debt commission, went out and held hearings around the country They actually pulled in input from people in this country instead of closing the doors and working behind closed doors, and came forward last week with a proposal that does cut $9 trillion and brings us to a balance someplace in around a half a decade. That still seems too long to me, but it's far better than what we're looking at with any of the other proposals, including the Ryan proposal, which doesn't balance for 26 years. It eliminates some departments of government, and it ends the Davis-Bacon Act, which, for example, is a federally mandated union scale at any of the construction projects in the country. It goes through and does some deep cuts in it, and it causes me to look at it and think, first, you know, can we sustain this, and can we do it? And I think we can, especially when you look back at many of these departments were created in the last 40 years. We got along without them in the first nearly 200 years of America. We should be able to take a serious look at eliminating some departments. And then by the same token, it rolls the Medicare around and the Medicaid around where there's more personal responsibility. I think they could actually have been stronger in some of it. The nutrition component of this, for example, people seem to forget that they increased food stamps 46% in the last farm bill. There wasn't a call for it. There wasn't a demand for it, and they couldn't find a statistical composition of people that called for it. They just did it to transfer wealth. So I think there's a number of things we can do to find more cuts, and there's maybe some things within it that I might favor that we not quite go so deeply. But I'm really glad there's a bold plan out there, and I congratulate the Tea Party for doing it, for the Freedom Works leadership on it, and all of the other components, all the Tea Parties, Americans for Prosperity, but also Mike Lee, in particular in the Senate, for being bold enough to call the meeting and the hearing there. And then you saw the political maneuvering where Senator Schumer's committee shut down that hearing inside the Senate Russell Building. They said it was an administrative decision, and that required us to walk up the street to Hillsdale's Center there to have that hearing. That tells you that politics are pretty rugged when it gets down to the point where right as the meeting starts, Senator Schumer can, his staff at least, can order that they shut down a hearing that's called for by a United States senator in an office building.
The last topic you've mentioned in statements, you've just mentioned not too long ago in our conversation about the need for the budget to be balanced. Even 5 years is too long given the amount of debt that we face, as you said. So what we saw in the House last week was a vote on the simpler version of the 1995 version of the Balanced Budget Amendment. Some wanted stronger language in there about capping spending at a percentage of GDP, supermajorities for tax increases. What type of amendment do you think would do the job best?
Well, I support the amendment that we passed out of the House Judiciary Committee and debated it for hours and hours, and that's the constitutional amendment requiring a balanced budget with an 18% cap on spending at 18% of GDP, and also a supermajority to raise taxes. The amendment that came to the floor of the House was what they called the clean version. I wondered where that language came from. Didn't seem to me as clean unless they thought that an 18% GDP language cluttered it or made it dirty. And so if you have an amendment that doesn't have teeth in it, it at least gave cover for some Democrats to vote for it, and very few did. It was Steny Hoyer spoke against it. This is, by the way, the exact language that passed the House back in 1995, and that came within one vote of passing the Senate in 1995. But I would remind people that there were six, that same amendment had passed the Senate in 1994. Six senators, and all Democrats, that had voted for it flipped the next year and voted against the very same constitutional amendment, and it failed by one vote. I don't want people to think that one vote actually makes everybody that didn't vote for something accountable. There were other votes there they could have had, but they had no intention of allowing a balanced budget amendment passing this Congress. You can see that with the debate on the floor on Friday, and we need to get to that point, but it's going to take a lot more political pressure from the public before we're able to pass a balanced budget amendment out of the House and Senate with a two-thirds majority to send to the states.
Congressman, we'll have to leave it there. Obviously, the debate goes on. Thank you very much, as always, for your time.
Thanks, Greg. I appreciate it, and we'll be connected again sometime soon.
Thank you, sir. Iowa Republican Congressman Steve King represents his state's 5th Congressional District. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WorldNet Daily.